thank you for coming for the open discussion. Great to have so many of you here. Right. So my name is Jina Lee. I'm here to moderate the speakers for today. This event is in parallel to the Goldsmiths BA Degree Show that is open to the public from the 18th of June to the 22nd. The conversation today is going to be recorded for the purpose of broadcast on Resonance FM, and you can listen to it on the online catalog. Right. Today, we will have discussion about self-organizing, do-it-yourself, collective process in art. I believe that many of you already had a look around this year's third-year degree show. As one of the students who took part of this exhibition, I witnessed various forms of collaborative production throughout the build-up to the show. For example, we have the students in the B2 who have organized self-curated show in the show, or performance and films of the Katrina and Caroline on the sixth floor of this building, and Vicky and Alex filmmaking and all this, a lot of forms of this type of process. Specifically. So through dialogic and collective decision-making process, they intend to steer up and shape the framework of the degree show provided by the institutions, and consequently manifest themselves as a new and another mode of to what is usually conceived as Goldsmiths. So to expand this approach, here we are invited speakers who have been working actively in the field of art, creating new and other platform for contemporary art and art practice. We will kick off the conversation with the very tangible material around this young do-it-yourself organization across Southeast London. Then the conversation will extend to the idea of collaboration, collective strategy, both positive and negative aspects of this type of process. So now I'd like to introduce five contributors who gratefully come to join this event. Evie and Matt from Utropia. There are art collective based in an old ice cream factory in Dufford, who has been committed to artistic cultural hub. And Edgar Schmitz, he's a London-based artist and writer, he's also a lecturer in Goldsmith at the Fine Art Contemporary Critical Studies. And Charles Lindiskian Mann, Dave and Richard, their artist collective who has been very actively showing their work across UK and Europe. They are a recent graduate from Goldsmith. Yuri and Bills and Tom from Oakmont, Young Do Yourself Organization in Peckham. Some of them are current third years in this course, second year as well. So yeah, each panel will talk about 10 minutes. Yes. Then we'll lead to conversation with the audience quite importantly. So yeah, let's start from Utropia and Evie. Please welcome Evie and Matt from Utropia. Thank you.
So yeah, we're in Tanners Hill, which is on Lewisham Way, just off Lewisham Way, on Deptford. So if you're heading towards Lewisham, and then you turn where the Ladbrokes is, a little way down, there's an archway with an ice cream factory down the bottom, and we've had that space for the last 20 months. Utropia was set up in 2002, and initially we didn't have a project space or a gallery or anything. We were just a network of, the tagline is a network of groups and individuals. Just people, you know, sort of meeting up and doing things together. And we were doing external events, the 291 Gallery and various other places, putting on bands and arts events. And then we got a project space, which Evie's going to talk about.
So we've had two project spaces over the course of about 6 years. Well, the first year we were kind of more like floating network, not using other spaces. The one that we had in Greenwich was a lot more kind of music orientated, and from the Engine House, we were producing compilations, so we were doing a lot more kind of like electronic music stuff, and really that was about getting together musicians. Now in our new space, it's a lot more art space, and we have about one exhibition a month. And that's on a golden platform. And basically, we've just got why it works and why it is DIY. Kind of free. It's because we've just got such a good network now that there's probably about 70 people in our network, and we're like a bit of an umbrella. So it's really easy to achieve stuff when you've got that many people and you've got that many kind of skill bases. But we just started doing it, really. And we're a charity, we've got charity status. We've never applied for any funding apart from a little bit on our website. But we just kind of did it. We didn't really want to wait around for funding because we kind of just do it. So we've had a habit of getting these spaces which might then be knocked down. So you get them quite cheap, or cheapish, relatively. So our last space, which you're going to see up in here, this is where this is our CD level. So that's from off from the engine house space. But with that, really, it was just about getting people together and producing things. And we had all the technology. This is the engine house. We're going inside right now. So we've been here. We had two rooms. And when we first moved in to this space, it was a blacksmith, so it's completely covered in soot. And we built in spaces into this. And this was really, really active. We had stuff going on here all the time. But there was less restrictions in terms of noise here because it wasn't a residential area. So we could make more noise and have that kind of fun.
It started as music rehearsal rooms, first of all. And then when we took over another unit, that became more of a sort of art base.
Yeah. Our new unit, we house about 9 studios. So we make a little bit of revenue off that. Because we're a charity, we don't have to pay VAT, and our business rates are cut by 80%. So that's like the practical side of things. And actually getting charitable status was quite easy, we discovered. We were going to go into someone else's charity status, but then we just got ours. So that's helped us a lot financially to be a charity.
It's actually stopped us from being crippled. That's the thing, it's actually really hard to keep going, purely by yourself and without funding and things, and you have to sort of be a little bit more creative, doing public art and squatting and things like that, actually does really help.
Yeah, because a lot of our stuff that we've been doing has been more public art based, which is what we're going to see quite soon. So with that, you don't need a space. You can just make your work on the street. So we've used Deptford High Street and the shops in Deptford High Street, and we organise a festival every year. That's what we talk about right now.
We've done, this will be this summer will be our fifth festival in 6 years. We skipped last year because we moved around since then, that was all quite stressful. We do a festival. The first one is in Wales, under Snowden, there were bands playing and installation art and what else? Performances actually around Snowden as well. We sort of had walks and other things going on around there. And basically creating a lot of joy for the 200 people that were there. So we're still trying to stay as grassroots as possible, and do it sort of on a word of mouth basis, then you end up meeting people you actually want to be around and you want to work with. And everybody is sort of like a circle of trust, because you know somebody, and everybody kind of has somebody who knows somebody else.
And at the Common Festival, it tends to be that everybody who comes participates in some way, like everybody gives something. We don't chat, it's completely free, everyone cooks together. But it also tends to be the fact that, not necessarily everyone's an artist, but someone might come and make something. This year, we've got a space, we're doing an amazing place in Wales, and we're going to build some toilets there. So it might be that people kind of give to the environment as well, in whatever way. That might be like through a jam session, or it might be through a toilet. So we try and so that people can bring on their skills and contribute to wherever we are. Everyone contributes, basically. We're not just providing it.
Yeah. And it builds a sense of community that way, where everybody has a role as well. And the community thing's really important to us. We're trying to be in Deptford as much as possible and in the sort of surrounding area, doing work that actually involves local people and not, a bunch of sort of, ex-students and students and arty wankers and all that sort of thing. It's actually about real people and, not doing work that alienates people. Or, we actively want people to come down and be part of things and enjoy themselves. That's what it's all about. It's not really just about preaching to the converted.
And that reflects in the work that we do, I suppose, because a lot of the work that we do has been on the streets and some kind of themes off.
Yeah, the fourth festival we did was actually up and down Deptford High Street, and a lot of the shops had acts playing and artists doing things, and a lot of the shops really kind of
took it into their hearts, you know, were really kind of into it. And that's, I mean, that's another thing about doing it yourself. You know, a lot of people, if approached, will actually sort of say yes to things that you would think normally they probably wouldn't. You know, when they're trying to sell linen and, you know, there's some girl playing a zither and singing in the shop, actually it does bring customers in, people are happy, you know, and it creates a nicer community.
Yeah. And also we've... Oh, God, it's gone really loud. Because also we do the matching band. There's going to be some footage of that.
Probably not.
I think it's coming soon. Do you want to go?
Here we go.
Yeah, this is the matching band. So this matching band has gone everywhere, from Deptford High Street to Canary Wharf, into the Tate Modern. Like, we went into the Turbine Hall, and the security just didn't know what to do because they thought, is this part of us? Like, is this the Tate or not? But we just walk in and out. So... yeah, this has got us around a bit.
We have a very strong public programme as well. Mobile Clubbing was created by this man, Ben Cummins, who's just gone off screen, who's one of our lot, and Pillow Fight Club as well, both of which have sort of, you know, kind of spread around the world and stuff. We do try and do stuff that, like I say, yeah, involves people and doesn't alienate people. I think that's quite important when you're creating any work, really.
Yeah. And there's quite a celebratory aspect to what we do as well, like even now with our art exhibitions, because we can't make as much noise, we have daytime gigs, but we try and punctuate all of the art shows that we do with as much kind of public. So we're not just having a show up, we'll also like punctuate it with music events that'll go on in the daytime and just quite nice things really, and that's really
this is
open.
A bit of mobile clubbing.
This is a bit of mobile clubbing. Does everybody know what mobile clubbing is? Do people know what it is?
You turn up with your own music at a certain time, normally like 6:02 or 7:08 or something, at a very public place, and everybody dances to their own music together. And it's actually quite hard to shut down, as you can imagine, which is quite nice.
Yeah, so this is us really being quite public.
And it's a shame you missed the pillow fight actually, because that looks.
Yeah,
really
the
cool.
Pillow fight is really nice.
Let's see if I can find.
But then with the project space, I mean, it's just funny. I suppose we use the project space as a platform, and that brings a lot of people in because it's a nice space and there's always something going on. But then from that, we use that as a springboard to do these public things and to do things out more, like the festival and. Mobile clubbing and the marching band and things. Yes, and also really what we do is support artists. So because we've now got facilities and we've got resources, we've been kind of stockpiling stuff, because when you've got a space, you can actually just collect all these things that are really useful. So lots of artists, you know, we kind of all share our stuff as well. And
you can actually collect too much stuff that's useful.
Yeah, but we've got a lot of wood, like we've got a lot of stuff, and even at our new space now, we've got about 9 studios, and then we've got a workshop space that an artist can use when they're working on their show, so we've got that workshop space. And
a sort of dark room as well for kind of anything that's dark, really.
Yeah, and theatre. We're building a theatre in there at the moment, and we're building a recording studio. So we're kind of always doing something, because there's so many of us. It's like people just come around, and it's really easy, because there is quite a lot of us, and it's a really supportive network. And it's big. It's big. And
we're very open as well. You know, all you have to do is sort of come down and say hey, and you know, get involved kind of thing, which is the nice thing. You know, that's pretty much how I met everybody, like 6 years ago, is just playing a gig with one of their bands, and then, you know, kind of
and we wanted to let people know about proposals actually. If anybody wants to put a proposal forward for Utrophia, then we're always welcome. And you can check out our website,
www.utrophia.net.
I could have done the .net.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. We'll do that again.
www.utrophia.net.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for having us.
Okay. Edgar Schmitz. When Gio first invited me, it seemed somehow perfectly plausible to be here today. And the more I thought about it, the less plausible it became. And so maybe I thought I'd talk about that. So I haven't got any visuals, because I didn't think it was making a lot of sense to talk about a practice in terms of like an output. But maybe my starting point was thinking about a whole series of topics for discussion you were mentioning kind of a few months back when this whole thing came into existence as an idea. And some of those had to do with what seems to be ostensibly the content today, so DIY structures, infrastructures, how does one mobilize activity, and so forth. But then there were also broader concerns when we first spoke about curatorial strategies, kind of infrastructures in terms of economies they might have to do with. There was some conversation around the internet and cyber strategies. All kinds of stuff. And I think one of the questions for me from that original conversation was one around what kind of economies one engages with and what might be at stake in engaging with those and not engaging with those. But then I thought about the title Artist-Led Organizations. I realized that all the stuff I could have talked about in terms of practice was neither artist-led nor did it have a really clear-cut relationship to organization as a practice. I was going to talk about the sweatshop series that my colleague Lisa Lefebvre, who works on the MFA curating here and is a curator and writer, and myself organized at the Serpentine Gallery over the last few years, which were kind of an attempt at generating like almost like an ideal dinner party in public. So you invite people you want to talk to. We normally have three speakers, and Lisa and myself, forcing them, restraining them, and getting them to talk to each other about thoughts in progress. Which was an attempt to mobilize, to think about what might be at stake in the discussion, in that sense, in relation to an infrastructure that was given by the Serpentine Gallery. I thought I could have talked about a couple of projects I did with Liam Gillick back a couple of years back, which had to do with interventions into institutional spaces and institutional infrastructures. We did a project at the ICA in 2005 or 6, which was the kiosk thing, and on the back of that we have a show which Liam authored under my name as a title, which is a conversation in itself. And another project that came to mind was the Academy project at the Van Abbe Museum, not only the Van Abbe Museum, but the Van Abbe Museum in Eindhoven, where a whole series of, again, collectives, collaborative practices were invited to think about the potentialities of the museum. What can you do with the museum beyond institutional critique, beyond a kind of like a direct appropriation of a collection, for instance? But I realized that none of that was actually artist-led, and I was less and less clear as to what that might mean. I mean, I work as an artist, I credit myself as an artist and writer for the moment. People I work with sometimes are artists, sometimes are not, but the logic was that even though the project might have been generated by artists and other people, it never had the full ethos of an artist-led project, right? So the kind of almost mythical connotation that goes with that, by which one somehow seems to know what an artist is, or how they might lead an organization, and how they might differ from other forms of organization. Some of these projects were curatorially led, so sometimes there were curators involved as another voice, as a kind of background for conversation, sometimes not. But also, none of these projects, or indeed my practice, have anything to do with setting up organizational structures. Right? Not because I don't think it's an important thing to do, but because it happens to not be what I do. Right? So it's not about setting up organizations, but to the contrary, it's about finding out ways of how one deals with existing infrastructures and frameworks. So it's almost the other way around. Rather than setting something up where there is a need for something to be, but it's not there yet, it's a matter of working from where you are, where there's always already too much around you, right? So it's kind of the other way around as a strategy. And I was thinking about those kind of interventions then more in terms of reassemblages or rejigging of existing component parts, rather than the construction of a an infrastructure, or indeed an organizational infrastructure. And what's at stake in that, and why I thought it might be even remotely interesting to talk about that today, is that it shifts the perspective slightly. It's not so much a matter of creating something, because it might be good to have something, but to think what happens when you're inside something and what you do with it. So in a way, the question, like, how do you respond to frameworks, how do you respond to situations that always go with expectations, they go with certain scripts, they go with certain professional trajectories, they go with certain intellectual projects, and so forth. And so in a way, for me, I guess, thinking about these practices again, it was much more interesting to think about how one exits existing frameworks and strategies rather than how one invents something. They overlap. I think invention and exiting or escape overlap a lot of the time. But they ask slightly different questions, both to a practice and then to a discussion about this practice. Because the other thing that I was then also increasingly unclear about for today was this question of an open discussion. And what that might actually be, you know, obviously there's a sense as to what that is. You put people together and they talk ostensibly freely, and that generates some interesting questions from the public, and then you might even have a broadcast, which may or may not be useful. But the question as to what actually is at stake, what can be produced in these discussions? And I think if it's not a matter of constructing a context, if it's not a matter of like signaling an importance, kind of using it as a promotional vehicle, which it has to do. I mean, to some extent, this is a degree show. You know, it's a certain moment in the professionalization of practices towards a different set of circulations, some which are artist-led, some which are not, some which are professional, some which are more improvised. But the question really also in a discussion, not so much how do you use a discussion to set up a framework or to connect up to existing structures to kind of signal the importance, but how can you use a discussion to introduce a sense of difference? How can this discussion also be there to undo maybe some of the premises of such a thing as an understanding of artist-led organization? And so in a way, both of these dimensions of today became questions for me, like what might be at stake in calling something an artist-led organization, and what happens in an open discussion? I guess some of that, in a broader infrastructural sense, has to do with questions that you raised implicitly around funding, kind of expectations carried towards practice, which on one hand one is very easy to talk about as a kind of somewhat monstrous machinery that kind of like scripts outputs that forces you to do certain things over other things. But there's also kind of maybe more complicated or even more sinister reading of that, by which in a way funding and the kind of discrete charm of the bourgeoisie, both in terms of like institutional realities and the art market and so forth, has a flexibility by which most of the stuff one thinks of as transgressive, provocative, revolutionary and so forth is by now fully ingrained, embedded, and inscribed into the very funding criteria one may or may not decide to engage with. So the fact that an open discussion is an almost necessary component part of any project, kind of be it at museum level or grassroots level, that aims to generate some kind of public support in the form of funding, will automatically go with an open discussion, will automatically go with a gesture towards a community, a constituency, will have to do with an outreach imperative that is non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable because it's underpinned by goodwill, there's a good political project behind it, you know, we all agree that it's a good thing to engage with people. And we all probably agree most of the time that it's not very good to alienate people, even though I'd like to kind of maybe, I think one can also discuss that, whether that's a useful thing to do or not. But so really the question, that what I wanted to do rather than talk about work, was just to throw a question back at this panel. What's at stake in this kind of situation? You know, what kind of, not how does this become a realistic situation to work from, but what kind of effects can one produce here? You know, I mean, when you talk, for instance, because I come second now, so I'll refer back to you because you came first. I mean, when you talk about involving people, you know, what does it generate? How useful is that? Who is that useful for? You know, what does it have to do with the practice? What does it have to do with the people and so forth? If you want to, if Jihoy will let us, otherwise we'll have to.
I think it creates joy. I think that's the most important thing. That's the most important thing in anything. Is joy and some sort of satisfaction to feel sated by something is probably the most important thing. And the only way you're really going to get that is by being directly involved with something, I think, or being able to get something from a piece you're looking at or experiencing or whatever. So for me, that's everything is joy and satisfaction, you know, for everybody involved.
Massively big idiot.
Quite unashamedly so. But then we do deliberately avoid funding as much as possible and trying to be, you know.
Why is that? I mean, why?
Well, I don't think that's true. I don't think we deliberately avoid funding. I think we've just never had to.
We haven't. But recently, we've got a big space at our new project space. We've got a really big open space, so we're applying for funding to get a community garden because we think that's something we couldn't do without funding because we can't buy loads of soil and loads of plants. So that's something that we do want funding for. But really, we can all make enough money on little part-time jobs, and we're not in it for the money. We're just in it to create something, to generate something. It's a platform. We get to meet really good people. Like, our practice is extended because it's always being informed. So I just think it's this open thing, really. We don't want to be restricted. It's not even that we'd be restricted. I think we're just doing it. We're just doing it, and that's it. And there's no need to say, oh, no, we'll wait until September, or we'll have a milestone in January, you know. It's just like...
How does it add to the content of what you're doing?
Well, I think we have autonomy. We just have complete autonomy within what we do. And
that's the thing about funding. I think you have to be careful where you choose funding. Mm. We chose funding for to go for funding for our website because
it wasn't going to have any impact, except we had to put a little logo at the bottom saying lottery funded.
Yeah.
You know, and that didn't feel like a big selling out thing, whereas you know, getting funding for certain shows and things, there is different criteria for...
And I think in terms of quality, there's so much art which has money pumped into it, which is shit. There's so much. There's so much. And you could go right now to Tanner's Hill and see a great exhibition. Like, it's really good. Like, it's actually really good. It's nothing to do with me, but it's a great exhibition. And there's no money in that at all. He's done it all out of goo and Vaseline and mud. It's amazing. You know what I mean? And, like, there's a lot of crap work out there with a lot of money in it. So I don't think quality comes into it. I think you can get quality anywhere.
So now can we move to Charles Fred Learn the Skin Man? We'll go back through this again.
Hi, my name's Dave Charlesworth. I'm a member of Charlesworth Lewandowski and Man.
And I'm Richard Lewandowski, also a member.
Yeah. We're graduates of Goldsmiths. I'm actually a current student on the MFA programme as well. But I graduated from Goldsmiths in 2004. Rich graduated...
2005,
a year later. And we started collaborating on the Charlesworth Lewandowski and Man project, which is ostensibly our major practice, our pretty much our single practice. We don't really work on our own. We are a group. But we started, the year Rich graduated, with our first work, which was in the Debtflex Festival as part of the open call for submissions.
Yeah. I just graduated, and Dave hadn't, I think it's fair to say, you hadn't really done much for a year after he'd graduated. But we quite often met up and we'd talk about things we were thinking about, we'd kind of talk about projects, and we started talking about the Debtflex submission process. And we just kind of started coming up with ideas for things we could submit. We hadn't really discussed at that stage actually collaborating, and something just seemed to click during the discussion. It seemed to be quite exciting, the way the conversation worked. And so we handed in a proposal, and it was accepted. We built two sculptures in an old kind of warehouse in Greenwich, just off the High Street, which has been demolished now, isn't there anymore. And we've been working together for since then, really.
I think for me, the kind of the process of coming together was at the end of I spent the entire year not making art, but actually I'd started to curate as part of a collective called Numbers Gallery, and we were curating in the space which is now 17 Gallery on Kingsland Road. We'd spent a year curating, like 10 graduates from graduates and undergraduates from Goldsmiths were curating in that space for the course of a year, and we had about 7 shows in that space and in around that area under the name Numbers Gallery. But I was kind of very keen to kind of get back involved in developing a practice of my own, or a body of work. And the kind of, it was a very exciting opportunity to work with Rich on the Debtflex Festival, and it seemed like a really natural kind of point where we had a number of common interests in our work, which we identified whilst we're both students together, but we're able to kind of push a bit further. And it worked very, very well for us, because it was something about the economies of scale that worked really nicely with it as well. It wasn't just the fact that we had some ideas that worked together, which was mostly telling bad jokes to one another over a pub table, pretending they were titles for works, but more that we can actually find a way of realising them with the economies of scale that we have. And I know we've talked about funding a great deal in the kind of preceding conversations, and that was very much part of what we were doing. We were able to pump more resource and more time into the work that we were able to achieve. So actually the scale of both our works kind of upped itself. And then I'll show you some, there we are, thank you. And so our first image, the image up there, is that's called Partially Shared, which is our first work that we made together as a group, which is a kind of reconstruction. How long was it? How big was it?
It was about 7 meters long. It's a life-size replica of Robert Smithson's partially buried woodshed, or as close to life-size as we could work out from the photos you can get of Robert Smithson's partially buried woodshed and the kind of the scales involved in those photos. That actually kind of kick-started our collaborative process, really, because one of the the interests we had, especially in that piece, the Smithsons piece itself, was the graffiti that you can see on the front of our reconstruction, May 4, Kent 70, which somebody painted onto Smithsons woodshed after the Kent State riots, and it's the date of the Kent State riots where some students were shot by the National Guard after protesting at Kent State University. And it became quite interesting for us because this piece was built by Smithson when he was teaching at the university. It was donated to the university, and shortly after the Kent State riots, this graffiti was painted onto the shed. The university, who had always promised to keep the piece, gradually let it rot and removed pieces as it went away. And we thought there was a kind of a really interesting link between the graffiti and the shed. I mean, I don't know if you know Smithson's woodshed, but he piled earth on top of the shed until the roof beam, the mid roof beam that supported the roof, cracked and broke. We thought there was quite a nice link between the graffiti, which memorialised the kind of the cracking of the student rebellion or protest movement at the time, and the shed. That kind of link made by the person who put the graffiti on. And we've kind of carried on that the protest stuff in our work has kind of carried on recently, and we've actually in the last year or two we've started collaborating outside of our own collaboration. We've started bringing other people in, most recently with James Bully, who is he's on the MA here, isn't he?
He's a music. Postgraduate student here at Goldsmiths, and he's been working with us on producing a series of pieces of music and sound works, which kind of bolt into sculptures that we've been making. So we've been making a lot of sound system sculptures that he's been involved in, and there's a really interesting. I think what mirrors the kind of the student daubing paint on the woodshed post, like it's kind of its inception by Smithsons. Like we've got this. It's a like an open loop of collaboration, something that extends the life of the work and the kind of the narrative that's tied to the work. And we've kind of, in a way, mirrored that in a way that we've collaborated outside of ourselves, in allowing kind of an open, an open loop of collaboration where we're not looking to work with somebody who's producing sound to our specifications, but actually looking for and saying we want something that sounds just like this, but actually allowing for some freedom where he can use his creativity to play and like respond to the work, which is kind of different into a kind of a commissioning role. We don't commission somebody to build something. We're actually looking for kind of a more of a, like an emotional creative response from James. And he's been working with us for some time now. It's probably useful to show the work that he most recently showed. Do you want to talk a bit about Boeing Way whilst I load it up?
We were recently in a residency program in a Boeing Way, which is a warehouse, an enormous warehouse, as you can see from that picture, somewhere near Heathrow. We were in the space for 6 weeks, and we were just kind of given the space for 6 weeks, along with five or six other artists, and just allowed to kind of make the work that we wanted. It worked out really well for us actually, because we'd been asked to take part in a show in Brussels with this Watchtower piece that you can see on the screen, and it was really great because actually this residency gave us the kind of the space and the time to actually construct that piece, and so we collaborated with James on this piece for the sound element that came out of the speakers embedded into the tower. The stuff we were working with around the time was to do with
it's like the anti-fascist protest movement, which is going on in London. This work was preceded the summer before with the work that we showed at the Deptford retrospective, which was a retrospective of people who've shown works as part of the Deptford X Festival over the 10 years that it's run, and on the back of our first work together, partially shared, Julie Alvarez from Bear Space asked us to be involved in that retrospective show as well. And in that work, we were examining the kind of the We've been very interested in the social, in the kind of the protest movement that's cropped up within the specific space of Lewisham, the kind of the locality. Frequently talking about doing a video work involving the clock tower down at Lewisham, which was a kind of a key kind of battleground point for the Lewisham 77 riots, when the National Front were marching, opted to march through Lewisham, Deptford, as a show of power during the 1970s, and a counter wave of young black people and socialist, various socialist movements kind of joined together to create a kind of a counter strike against that. And what we did was we, for Get Up Stand Up, which was the piece that we made for the Deptford X retrospective, we produced a sound system work that echoed the kind of some of the social narratives that we were reading, kind of getting involved in examining the kind of the blogosphere around the protest movement of 77, and producing a work that responded not just to the kind of the, in a literal kind of way, to the what was going on at that time, but actually exposing some of the holes in the narratives, the social histories, looking at kind of the things that were missed out by people and things that were omitted, and these kind of tensions between different stories given by different people.
I think the kind of internet research into the kind of the anti-fascist movement in the 70s brought up some really interesting stuff, because there's a lot of arguments about what happened on these days and where people were and where the police were and all this kind of stuff. But the really interesting thing for us with these kind of really big arguments that still go on today about this specific moment on Clifton Rise, just down the road, when all the anti-fascist protesters were kind of kettled into the street by the police, and an old lady on Clifton Terrace pulled out this sound system. She started playing music to all the protesters. And now the argument now between people who were there is whether that music was Get Up Stand Up by Bob Marley or whether it was Police and Thieves by Junior Mervyn. And this is kind of a big deal. And we've spoken to people who were there who were really adamant that it was Police and Thieves or it was Get Up Stand Up.
And none of them could accept the fact that maybe during the entire time they were there, that they could more have played than one both. Track could have been played. Something was just on loop. So it's kind of like the way that people soundtrack their own kind of histories as well, which became very interesting for us. And actually what happened as part of this is we worked with James to produce an audio track for a performance that we did. And he produced a track called New Cross Massacre, which actually responded to this work, but then looked a little bit further to the early 80s. And it was based on a Linton Kwesi Johnson spoken word track, which was of the same name, New Cross Massacre, which is, so it kind of became like a dubstep, like pirate radio transmission kind of performance using a Linton Kwesi Johnson track, which we'd love to speak to Linton Kwesi Johnson about actually kind of getting some sort of rights to sample it to play that out, just because it's a brilliant track and we really like to use it. But what was interesting when we moved over to Southall was that when we started to do our research over there and speaking to people in the kind of the various kind of protest movements down that side of London, which is almost like the other end of London, we found that actually many of the same characters were starting to appear. Various people who were involved in that kind of the protest movements over in New Cross were actually like active over there fighting National Front. And actually it was part of a big part of the narrative over there is the death of Blair Peach during kind of the riots, which really, really strange was he was killed by the stories that he was killed by during a scuffle by a policeman wielding a kind of a galvanized rubber radio, which sounds very strange, but apparently it was like a very, very heavy object that he was struck with, and he was killed. The show opened like a week after Ian Tomlinson died, which has become really, really strange. With working that with that as a narrative, so we created this watchtower, which kind of was to create something, which is partly for this other show called Liberty and Security over in Brussels, but partly to respond to create a sonic weapon of sorts. Mirroring what was going on at the time. So we worked with James to produce with a bass line. We selected a bass line from a track by The Roots called Jar War, which was about the death or murder of Blair Peach. And we used that bass line to create a sonic weapon of sorts using the watchtower in the space that we were working within. And I'd just like to play you a section of that now, if possible. Loud, dead loud. stop it for a bit there, just not that it goes on or anything, but I think one of the kind of the things that we're interested in is it was that it filled a space for 5 minutes, and it was like kind of drop in and out of this single bass line, the main bass line from Jawar by the Roots, and then into kind of more static sound. In 32,000 square foot worth of kind of space, it became quite an imposing kind of experience.
And it was actually, I mean, we ended up getting that noise because we'd kind of got to the position where we'd worked with James over a few projects, and actually it was just really exciting working with him. So what we tend to do now, and what we did for that project was tell him that we wanted something. We wanted sound. This was what the sculpture was going to basically look like, and we'd quite like to use the bass line from the Roots track, because that had a kind of a specific link to what we were talking about. And then he just kind of works away on it and sends us things, and it's quite nice to receive these things that you don't necessarily have a lot of control over, but it kind of makes it a little. It seems to work even better than we could make it work. You know.
Yeah, and I think there's probably something beyond in terms of what we're doing now. There's quite a nice little movement of kind of beyond our own practice. I think the final thing we'd like to say about collaboration maybe is probably about some of the networks that we're tied into and how, like, you know, how kind of reciprocal arrangements within those networks are really helping us to as artists independent from like the kind of a commercial gallery scene to kind of get like our work out there to kind of quite wide audiences. We're working with various people. We work with Off Modern quite a lot. We've worked with Holden Freight, Pearson Ramsey. There's a Boeing Way, who are relatively new group.
As well as in places like Liverpool, with like Wolstenholme Projects in Liverpool. And I mean, there's a really kind of tight little scene up there. That's really nice. People just taking over spaces and just using them for exhibitions, and they do really well.
And there's something nice about all of these, what's very impressed me about all of these groups is a lot of level of of professionalism that seems to have seems to be really, really kind of present in the DIY scene, like, you know, at the minute, the people are kind of able to get out there and not just putting stuff up in like spaces, but actually having real curatorial foresight, having a real think about the kind of the selectivity of works, but also the structures of exhibitions, and also the kind of the language of their movement, what they see their group as being, actually having kind of a really kind of a strong kind of a set of kind of principles that kind of sit behind that. You know, so I think the thing that's really exciting for artists right now, I mean, I think funding is kind of quite a pertinent question, and we've not really dealt with funding too much ourselves. We've not really gone down that route yet. I think there are projects on the kind of the horizon that I think would be really exciting for us to get a bit of additional income to kind of support those projects. But more excitingly, I mean, it's a tough time for people graduating at the minute, I think, like with the world the way it is, the kind of the financial markets being what they are. But there's some quite interesting things that have happened recently, which means that getting hold of spaces has become far, far easier for artists. The empty homes legislation that came in the past year has made it very easy for artists to get hold of space on 6 weeks, for a 6 week basis, because basically, I don't know if maybe people know it or not, it's probably something that's spread like wildfire, but government legislation has meant that if you've got an empty property, you end up paying, before you're exempt from paying business rates or council tax. Now it's the case that you're no longer exempt because there's a scandal of empty homes in the UK. And what's happened now is if a company gives over an empty space for 6 weeks for a charitable kind of event of sorts, which a lot of this kind of slots into, they get exempt for between 3 and 6 months, depending on the size of the property. So there's a whole host of very exciting spaces just sitting there for recent graduates, like undergraduates and practicing artists to get hold of and get access to. So, I mean, for us, there's a wealth of different opportunities kind of like being kind of pushed towards at the minute, which we find really, really exciting. And it's kind of nice to work within the White Cube sometimes, but it's also very nice for us to work with people with really strong values outside of that as well. So. Sorry, a bit of a preach there.
Can you say a bit more about these values that you keep mentioning?
Values.
You just keep kept saying like strong principles, values,
it's
I'm just wondering what you could just.
No, I think it's. Sorry, that's a bit of a kind of. It's probably a bit of a throwback to my student politics days. I think, for me, I don't think I'm necessarily speaking for Rich, although
like I think I may be. I think it's just really nice working with a group of people that you know that they have like an agenda of sorts, that there is a particular type of discourse that they're engaging with, or a particular type of work that you can expect to see with them. Like, whilst it's kind of allowing for a kind of dynamic range of artists, that you understand that the type of there's a certain type of criticality being kind of explored with them, and I think that's kind of what we've got with a lot of the groups.
I think often it actually comes down to money, if in the kind of, if you can call it a kind of a DIY scene, it's about the fact that the money or the funding isn't necessarily there. It's a group of people who just want to do it. It's people who want to put on shows, and it's people who want to make work, and it's people who want to play gigs, and they fund that themselves. They just find ways of doing these things or making them happen, and it's nice to work with those kind of people, you know.
Yeah, there's an enthusiasm for what they're doing, right, which kind of goes beyond the kind of, you know, beyond the call of duty almost, which is really, really exciting to work with, because they, you know, that they care about what's going into the show, they care about the works that they're showing, they care about the artists that they're showing as well. And I think that's been the case with all the people we've worked with in the past 12 months. It's been very much the case, and that for us interests us more than maybe at this moment in our career, the working with somebody who's more interested in like a product per se, because we don't seem to make products that people will be willing to take home on a. So for us, it's nice to find people who kind of like are interested and care about what we're doing. I think that's probably it for us. Yeah.
I'll now move to Off Modern, Yuri.
Hi, I'm Yuri Patterson from Off Modern.
I'm Felix from Off Modern.
I'm Tom from Off Modern as well.
And
do you have some photos?
Yeah. We'll just show some photos in the background, I suppose, of some previous events and our recent week-long show. Off Modern is it's something that started about 9 months ago now, and we were offered this possibility of a monthly sort of club night, but we decided to expand that into a one-night opportunity to show work as well, as a continuing rolling exhibition. And as a reaction to, I suppose, the event sort of based activities in this sort of part of London to do with art, and also an attempt to, I suppose, create dialogues between different institutions, people at different institutions, not just being a Goldsmiths-based event, but involving people from Camberwell, Slade, across the whole board, as well as recent graduates. And we've done 7 of these events, which combined a private view style event at the start with a club night afterwards, where we'd have bands, bands and music. And the whole idea was to, I suppose, create an ability for a discourse after the art.
I think what we wanted to start was, at first it was a place that students and other, you know, like we said, recent graduates could experiment, really. So we'd receive submissions from all sorts of people wanting to show their work, and we would, you know, put it into this space and, you know, to a certain extent curate a show that would last one night, that would give people a chance to, you know, take a couple of risks, maybe put up something that they wouldn't, you know, want to enter into a show or wasn't part of their actual like working practice, but they could really experiment. And it sort of led, these shows sort of, they got, the more we did them, the more sort of cohesive they became. They started off very, well, ropey, but they got considerably less ropey. And then they, the whole sort of doing these shows in a club, we encountered a lot of problems really in doing it. I mean, as obviously working in a space that wasn't really very too small. It was just, it was a room in a club, so we'd have to really work to make the space as good as we could in order to show work in it. And also it, there are difficulties obviously in having a private view that leads onto a club night, because it's whether people are focusing on coming to see a show or whether people just want to go and get pissed and dance. And it's sort of finding that balance, which has been quite difficult. And I think all these shows that we did at Corsica Studios, which is where the night was happening, really led on to our first sort of big group show that we held in an empty shop in the Elephant and Castle shopping centre, in a new gallery that had just opened. We were the sort of inaugural show there. And it was also the first time that we were able to sort of flex our muscles as a collective of artists ourselves. So we exhibited some of our own work and invited people who have who had exhibited in the past shows, and who we've sort of built up a group of people that we're associated with, and people that we know are going to produce work that we think is going to be good and people are going to like and respond to. So we put on this show that we called Frontiers in the shopping centre for a week, and it was our sort of first big proper thing that we put on and were very sort of pleased with, and had a very good reception. And I think now we're organising a festival for the summer, which will too have we're going to have some sort of loads of bands, but as well as that, we're having a permanent exhibition and things like some speeches and workshops and all the rest of it for a week in the East End. So we're sort of continually experimenting, I guess.
I think that it's our interest in these kind of activities has always been very Southeast London based, and trying to create sort of connections between different groups that normally wouldn't meet in a less stressful environment than a very formal art environment. So the club night allowed for that to happen. I think it was a kind of social club for the arts. And I think that led nicely on to this week-long show, and it's further led on to, formulating what could be loosely now described as a scene with other groups like Lucky PDF and Sunday Painter, and showing that in a different area of London, sort of exposing that to what is sort of the East End art scene, and allowing that to happen. I think that's what the festival is going to be about. The art end of it is going to be very very much based on exposing Southeast London in the East End. I think another elements of our group practice, what's more of the collective form, is our website, which I think exposes exactly what we're doing more so as a group rather than these shows, which are us as a curatorial group.
And it's not just us that put stuff on the website. There's a whole host of other people that we've sort of invited to come and do things, and or people have ideas that they've put on there, and it's quite a nice sort of rolling, it's sort of like a blog really, of people that we know we're going to do something that is interesting, really.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Wow, it was a pretty much long session than expected. So now we are going to move to the question and answer and conversation with the audience. So if you have any questions amongst the audience.
And my personal opinion after hearing a lot of these things is that the sort of large interest in sort of the structure and sort of structure of organisations and sort of organising a new kind of style of gallery and art organisation seems to be taking sort of precedent over the actual work for me. And I don't know, I have more of a feeling that good art kind of happens on a much more personal level. I sort of I don't know, personality and emotion in work, and it seems to have like dissolved into organizations and things, and it's quite a negative comment, I know, but I'd like, yeah, some feedback.
I thought this was about do it yourself. So I mean, you know, art, I think the fact that anybody, you know, everybody does art here of some sort or is a creative person here, I think that's maybe separate from, well, my understanding of what this panel and this thing is about is about doing it yourself and, you know, trying to get somewhere to show your work or whatever, or, you know, to create a hub where you can show work or, you know, make connections and that sort of thing, is it not? So, I mean, I don't really understand the question, I guess, like, if it's not...
It's not like we're trying to set up some sort of creepy agency or anything. It's like us... I mean, it's us enabling ourselves to put our work out there, and it's a lot of being able to do that is really difficult to do by yourself. And, you know, I think that's what we're doing. I mean,
that's pretty key, actually.
You come out of art school, and a lot of time, art school chews you up and spits you out. And if you haven't worked with the people that are around you at the time and sort something out, then, you know, I think you've got to use the time that you have when you're with all these other people that are interested in the same things you are.
I guess for me, it's partly the framing of the conversation around like the organisation itself, or collaborative organisations, important. I think your point is quite an interesting one, because for some people, a practice or a process such as this would not work. I think what we've probably not really spoken of is kind of like ego battles, kind of creative tension, and all of that stuff which you have to get right, or else the work starts to fail. And Rich and I argue as much as we agree, but in a session like this, we would probably kind of present what we've made, and therefore that's kind of a resolution of kind of where we're at in terms of a discourse. For every work we make, we have about 10 works we don't make because we've fallen out, we're not talking about it, passive aggression. You know, it's all part, you know, it can be really challenging at times. And that is part of the process of production. And that's probably what happens through that discourse is actually we're able to kind of tease out and reframe ideas and reproduce things. And there's been a number of occasions where we've produced a work and we've both stepped back from it and go, oh, I kind of pictured it like this. And Rich is like, oh, well, I kind of saw it like this, and it's something completely different. And then the work, start of that kind of that work and that openness of the practice becomes something, so the interesting starts to happen in that space, which is part of that collaborative process.
So. You talked about personality, but surely there's collective personality and collective vision, which is just as valid as like individual personality.
That's kind of what I was going to say next. Like, to outsiders, it seems very clicky.
Oh, no. I will have it. I will have it.
That's my... This is the biggest clique thing going, isn't it?
No, it's a small clique.
No, it
is a big clique if it's a clique.
It's a very big clique. I think what a lot of us have been talking about is making connections with other networks as well. So we've got people we work with in Chicago, in Norway. Like, it's quite big, and it's a very open invitation almost. Like, it's up to you.
I wanted to make a brothel for the degree show, and like, well, I didn't get in the Ben Pimlott building for one, my studio space, and it ruined the whole thing. Would you be interested in a bit of brothel collaboration? It was going to be like, I was going to be the mistress of the brothel, like as a tranny.
He's pimping yourself out.
Have you got girls or boys for this?
It's going to be boys.
Have you got them already lined up?
I've got two who are willing. Like, what I'd be doing is paying them, like, myself, paying them to be there in the space. And they would be... can pay them extra on top of that for sex.
I think you should send us a proposal. I think we might be interested. Seriously. Hello@utrophia.net. Send us a proposal.
Hell yeah. Rock and roll.
Honestly.
Maybe we can also... bring up some of the practice that this year's degree show had. One of the distinguished kind of collective process in this show was in the B2, where they made this show in the show to challenge the normal structure of the space, where it's just provided by individuals. And there's nine students gathered together to create their own space architecturally and also curatorially. So Nina Morganson, do you want to talk about it a little bit?
Can I talk about it from the outside?
Yes. Sure.
Can I describe what it was like?
This would be useful.
It seemed like many of the students spend a lot of the time curating the work of you all in the space and taking a lot of consideration and paying a lot of attention to the way in which the space is constructed and the way in which the space is as a whole, rather than each of us, they get like their own, assigned by their own space and their own work inside the show.
No, I mean, I guess I just like coming from like the discussion right now that happened here, I'm just thinking that I kind of agree with Edgar in the point of kind of questioning the point of the discussion in the first place, or how this occurs as a collective process and what the meaning and implications of that would be. And I think that in relation to the B2, I don't actually know how much kind of collective dialogue or something like this has occurred in this space, or how, I don't know. I don't know how that can be presented right now as a discussion in this sense. I don't know.
I think it's really important, because actually sometimes you're just doing it and it's implicit and you're like, oh yeah, we all understand each other, and oh yeah, we have these values, or you know, and sometimes you take it for granted that you do need to discuss it actually.
Okay, but I'm just thinking, I mean, there was something in this whole presentation that seems to be a very big emphasis on a kind of social space or social platform, and I was wondering generally how that relates to the actual works, because there seems to be a separation between the practice and the actual social mode that facilitates a certain type of presentation of practices. I don't know, I mean, if I can say something about what we attempted, I think that there was a kind of mixture between a certain social dialogue or platform and integrating that into the work somehow, so that even spatially the whole design and the architecture is not something as such that would be separate or only operate as a platform, but something that, I don't know, kind of also, I don't know, so it would become a discussion somehow of where the distinction of this is and where the distinction of the organization is and the actual works, because there seems to be, I mean, in this discussion so far, there seems to be quite a lot of distinction between the organization and the platform and the actual work.
I think really what we said at the second ago, we're kind of organizations that present platforms. We're basically galleries. So the work itself, I mean, that has its own autonomy, because they're free to present whatever work they want. So Andrew Kerr at the moment, who's got his exhibition at Eutrophia, his work hasn't been influenced by our organization. The only influence it's had is that he could do whatever he wanted, and he could use a lot of wax and use a lot of mess, and he could do all that in our space because we said, yeah, go for it.
And we'd support him. I mean, that's our role, is just to support.
Yeah, we just support him, but in terms of his work, nothing gets compromised, because his work is his own thing. It just happens that we platform it. So,
you know, I mean, but I think going back to your comment, I think what for this event on the back of the degree show of the undergraduate program at Goldsmiths, right? I mean, this is always going to talk about professionalization. It talks about self-help in terms of institutional recognition. It talks about working modalities that one finds seductive and or useful towards a career that one envisages in one way or another. You know, I think what's interesting, what needs to be teased out, and what is implicit but interesting today about the different presentations, I think there's huge differences, not just between the kind of stuff that I'm putting forward and the kind of practice-based kind of insights the other groups have presented, but there are differences between how you work, how you talk about work, how you talk about yourselves in relation to your constituencies and so forth. What's at stake, I think, is the very question of professionalization as a setting up of a milieu in relation to which one works. And that milieu, I mean, like the B2 kind of project, has a very different internal politics than, say, the kind of politics you're putting forward as a working modality between providing a space and having a work. if one wants to think about that as a spectrum of possibilities or of different trajectories or possible avenues, it allows you to get away from the idea as if like an artist as qualified by a department had any consistency beyond that term and the degree, right? It's the first thing I think that's blatantly obvious by looking at the show here and similar projects. You know, I think it's an institutional reality to talk about an artist or a qualified artist, but that doesn't say anything about a project, right? It doesn't say anything about whether practice is kind of fundamentally hermetically individualistic, whether it's collective, what that might actually mean and how that's being played out and so forth. And I think that's then the question is whether one, whether for instance it is interesting for the practitioners in the B2 to kind of think to that extent about the kind of politics of collectivity, attention, work, modalities, encounters and so forth. You know, that's one particular milieu that I think is set up very successfully and very intriguingly, and you know, it creates its own problems, but it generates its own kind of discussion. You know, the kind of thing you'd seem to be putting forward from as much as I can gather from looking at stuff and hearing you talk now sets up its own kind of political claims, its own kind of problems, its own blind spots and so forth. And I think if anything, but how I see today, and I think that's what might be at stake in this idea of an open discussion, is that each of these projects in a way puts forward a whole series of not values, but kind of ideas as to what might be relevant. You know, and I think if one wants to engage in that, then one can have a question about the politics behind this, you know, to which extent is this really talking about infrastructures, to which extent is this talking about the agency of a work, is it talking about constituencies necessarily or not, or which projects do, which ones don't. And what I appreciate about today, I think, and about the invitation, indeed, is seems to be an implicit willingness to open that up, you know, rather than to kind of regurgitate this kind of back then Fries did it for a whole generation of people, and that might be an attractive model to think about, you know, which seems a much less stimulating way of engaging the discussion somehow.
I kind of want to say first that our catalogue, we're a clique, and we met in the halls in the first year, and when we met, I think we probably all thought that we were the best then, but that's because we were kind of all in halls together doing, like, watching Jay-Z and stuff. But I mean, I'm quite glad that Alex didn't present in Ben Pimlott Building, because his brothel kind of represented half of him that I don't really like. And I'll say that because, I mean, we're a clique, but, you know, we kind of hate each other as well, kind of. And at least I think partly the two exhibitions I've seen for the last 2 years before this one, maybe more so in the Ben Pimlott Building, that you see kind of cubicles of art. And so on the way to, like, coming in to give him my form about where I'd like to show my work, I was rung up and asked to do the whole B2 thing. I was kind of wondering where I was going to show work, and it's kind of just to be daunted with, just be like to put forward a space where you want to show your work as an individual, kind of is a bit daunting, and it's kind of like you're going to get given a box, and then if I was going to get given a box, I'd probably stand there and be like, I'd end up being quite a bit more confused than I would be whereas working with maybe a group of people. So I think that's why B2, I kind of probably ended up learning a lot more from doing the show working in B2 than, I mean, anywhere else. So maybe these kind of things should be maybe employed more in degree shows to come or something. I mean, my only example of a lot of that I was thinking about was the Ruskin show last year, which was really good because they did it. It's a much smaller college, but their show was really good because it was, the whole thing was done as a big group, as a big, and I very much agree that I look for the personal in art, and that's why what I get out, and I like to see that. And I think it can still happen whilst working in a group, because I mean, halfway through EP2, I sort of felt like I should be putting my work in like a crater or something, because I felt like it was from another planet. But like, I think, maybe I'm being vague, but I think it kind of helped bringing out the person in my work as well as being in a group. But I just think there's a major difference if when you're walking around it, that you're not just going from cubicle to cubicle. And it's really obvious, so maybe we should do it more. But it's very hard, because you're not going to be able to designate the sixth floor to a certain people, then get them all to start working with each other. It's going to be a hard thing to do.
I suppose that is the thing about doing it yourself, though, isn't it? Because then you can choose the people you work with. You know, maybe it's easier to find a space when there's more of you, you know, and that sort of thing. It's easier to roll things along when there's more of you, in a sense. That's been my experience anyway.
There's always been an endemic problem with Goldsmiths, with the degree shows roll around and people box off their work and make their own mini exhibition spaces. And it seems to talk to a kind of a resistance to, like, kind of people set up their own, like tiny exhibitions of their work and create, like, for an entire their entire career at Goldsmiths, they don't make installations and all of a sudden it becomes an installation, because that seems to, like, be the only way to, like, create a total realization of their artwork in their terms. At an important critical juncture. And I think what it does is it does close down that dialogue between the different works and the different narratives. And I think in an ideal world, education or an educational experience at Goldsmiths would open that dialogue further and would actually challenge people to think about their work, not just in relation to, like, their own practice and, like, the form within the space, but actually within a narrative within the course, amongst the peers that you're studying with, whether it is setting up a number of cliques. I think that's healthy. It can sound like it could be a dangerous thing, but I think something like that is useful, because it allows you to define yourself not just by your work, but by, I don't want to use the term values again, but something that you think is critically important. And I think that's maybe something that is missing. It's something that I think from walking around B2, it does seem to be doing something different to some of the space, and I think that's a really interesting start point, and maybe something that should be considered in the future, or a challenge that should be at least laid down.
And I think it's options, because you've obviously got the option to make a cube, or you've got the option to be in a collective, you've got the option to show in a nightclub, you've got the option to show in a festival, there's so many options. So I suppose for the artist, the responsibility of the artist is just to make the choice of what option best represents your work, or what option kind of speaks for your work. So if you're going to go into this collective identity and a collective personality, you make that choice to do that. You know, you don't just fall into it. If you want to keep on, if your goal is the Hayward retrospective, if that's your goal, individual exhibition, that's your goal, then you go for that. But I think this is just all about options, isn't it, really? And we've all been kind of self-starters who've gone, okay, let's make work, and that's what's important to us, is doing stuff.
You don't have to choose just one option either.
Yeah, I think it's just like this thing of, okay, let's do it, and it is strength in numbers. Financially, you get a bit of support, because people can chip in money, you can chip in transport, there's a lot of that, and it has to be a bit social in a way, because to keep going, to keep motivating each other and that kind of thing, sometimes that just helps if you're all motivated towards one thing and you're all pushing each other towards one thing. So.
If I understood what you were saying, Edgar, about you were talking about, like, sort of a sinister institutionalization of the bottom-up constituted DIY ethos that's now sort of been implanted into proposal opportunities and larger organizations. And you started to sort of hint that there was some, that be a detriment to organizations like this, or it would have some effect.
No, not to the, I mean, to the contrary. I mean, in a way, what I was trying to signal is that I think that a lot of the terminology one uses in a rather emphatic sense, you know, kind of artist-led, DIY, self-help, and so forth, carries in a rhetorical luggage that is completely at odds with institutional reality within which it circulates for the moment. You know what I mean? I think there is a, and this is not nostalgic investment in this, in some kind of good old days when squats were really illegal or kind of tolerated, when one could, you know, I'm not interested in that kind of rhetoric at all, but I think it's important in a way to pick up on that reality, to get rid of the rhetorical ballast that kind of automatically scripts some of the expectations around these projects. You know, I think what's completely unspoken, but that all kind of came up in in glimpses today, is that we have very different understandings of clique here, in here and in the audience. We have I mean, like, between a kind of, like, hippie position, as you call it, that I respect completely, it's all about joy with the people on the street, on the festival, towards creating a sound weapon in a kind of, like, airport hangar, there are worlds that need to be talked about between these different projects, right? And I think kind of the kind of, like, somewhat outdated and borrowed rhetoric of a DIY artist-led whatever doesn't allow for those conversations to be triggered. You know, I mean, like, the other... Notwithstanding that, I think there is a conversation to be had, if one wants that, around critical agency in relation to contemporary art and institutional practice. It's not the conversation tonight, but, or today, rather, it's not even evening. you know, you think about like the way in which the Whitechapel positions itself at its reopening, Goschka's work for the Whitechapel and so forth. There's a whole conversation to be had, I think, around criticality of working from within the institution and how this recuperated as critical capital. You know, I mean, it's a separate conversation to this one. But I think it'd be counterproductive to completely exclude that from the horizon of what seems a kind of situation where everybody suddenly accepts that it's somewhat about creating harmonious, productive working environments and how to best further one's career. I think that, again, is one option. You know, I mean, a lot of people I kind of know and respect for working don't work best in situations that are suited to their practice, but to the contrary. You know, they work in defiance of, in relation to, or by appropriating situations, would be horrified by being given the perfect space to realize a work. You know, I think there's different consistencies to practices in the contemporary, and I think they're implicitly here today on the panel, but I guess it's important to highlight that and like foreground that, to open it up for discussion, you know, rather than gloss it over as if we all meant the same thing when we say artist or collective.
Lest we forget that there were always generations that created links and currents.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I mean, like, I think the kind of where this is haunted, and I don't think institutionally, but kind of to the contrary, in a grassroots manner, haunted by that particular kind of strange moment of like the original DIY kind of freeze generation type gesture, which on one hand seems a very kind of successful, you know, whatever that might be. It was successful as launching a whole series of careers under all the wrong terms and all the wrong circulations, but it did, right? But I think the fact that that is then cohered into a movement that all these people work kind of their asses off getting out of is a similar thing to what happened with relational aesthetics and Bourdieu's theorizations in the 90s, where I think one needs to understand the tensions between what we now think of as movements of the past and the realities of practice, you know, that like were triggered by those but also worked against those. And I think that's certainly, I think, for the kind of YBA, that's the word, couldn't think of.
Young British.
You know, to which extent that actually is a movement or not, to which extent it makes sense to talk about that as a current, to which extent there was a market production and so forth. Those are the realities that play into or should play into a conversation around DIY culture today. You know, in a situation where this is about people effectively having to decide how they professionalize themselves. It's not about the fact that they want to continue developing a practice outside of the institutional context, but the question seems to be what kind of practice do they want to develop? Then also in relation to that, is that a realistic agenda or not? But those are the questions, you know what I mean? And I think it's fantastic to get a sense, if one looks at it like that, to get a sense of different ways of orchestrating situations that different practices work well within, if that's one way of cohering this panel somehow.
If I may, individuals also flourish in these environments.
I think, so I was going to say that actually, like with the Wow Wow in Peckham, you know them? From Wow Wow, a lot of people's individual careers were like really rocketed, like Gareth Pugh, who's quite a big fashion designer, Matthew Stone is, you know, it's just that these people, individuals do come out of it. It's not like everyone gets submerged within it, you know, it's actually a really good platform. And if you're doing something exciting, people will come and see it, you know, and then there's individuals. It's all the time, that's how it works. I just think it's, and it's quite nice to be part of a movement, really. That's kind of as well why you do it, in a sense, because there's something real there in it.
Because like Matthew Stone and Gareth Pugh couldn't have done that like by themselves.
So it's, and it's
it would have been a different path.
Yeah, and it's, and it, and they got to where they are like so quickly and so successfully because they were able to sort of give themselves an identity. And they played to that, and that was what enabled them to do so well, and you know, and produce things that people really like. And I think it's in instead of just being, you know, a group of people, you know, if you say we're Wow Wow, this is what we do, you can come to these things and see what we're doing. It's just a really good way of getting more and more people to see your work, and that's really what all of this is about, you know.
Good point, actually, because whenever you do anything as a group, suddenly you're tapping into so many networks. Because, you know what I mean, like that whole time when Wow Wow was really exciting, there was there were so many different types of people going down there. It wasn't just like a trendy art set at all. It was very diverse because they had a lot of different people working within Wow Wow. Just the same with Utrophia. We get all kinds of people coming down because there's so many of us.
Well, we're all different kinds of people.
Yeah. And then you get a lot of exposure, basically. You can get a lot of exposure because you feed into all these networks, and it's not a bad thing, is it?
I guess we better finish our open discussion session here. It was great to listen to all of the contributors' pitch and also the talk within the audience. There's a picnic session on the backside of the Bempima building. We commissioned second year to prepare some sandwiches and drinks. So, it's all about economy and, you know, circulation by generations. So yes, thank you very much for staying here. Thank you very much for coming.